authors. Any content provided by our bloggers or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, municipality, individual, or anyone or anything.
He's a surgeon. He's a 100-ton boat captain. He's a lieutenant on Seaside Heights Beach Patrol in New Jersey. He's a member of the Coast Guard Auxiliary. He's Dr. Michael Ketchmar. Need answers to your medical questions? We have them. Listen in to hear latest on medical topics related to all that and more.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Dr. Michael Ketchmar. This is Lifeguarding with Dr. Michael Ketchmar. And we have the off-duty lifeguards with us today. And we have a special guest today. Paul DeFazio, is that how you pronounce
it? That's it.
Right. And he's our special guest today. We have a special show today just for our special guest. Today's date is September 9th, the year of our Lord, 2022. And we're coming from our Tom's River Studios. So I want to say hello to everybody. So, Tyler, you want to say hello?
What's up? Welcome, Paul.
Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler.
Tyler's going to try. He's with the tank top. He's trying to show his muscles off, so.
Yeah, me and Sean went for a four-mile run before training for our half marathon.
Oh, good.
That you refused to do with us.
No, I ain't doing that. And we have Sean. Sean.
Sean.
Sean.
Nice to have you on.
And want to say hello, Paul. Say hello to everyone. Appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks very much for having me. First, I have to say you guys must have gone through, asked about 100 people before you got to me. I mean, you know, bottom of the barrel.
Oh, you're bottom of the barrel? Yeah. No. You know, Can you raise his camera just up a little bit? We're cutting the top of his head off. No, just...
I got it, guys.
Okay. Yeah, just raise it up a little bit. Can you do that? Yeah.
That's the most confident introduction anyone's ever given us.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's... Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, you look good on camera. That's one thing.
You think so?
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of guests, and we're really appreciative of all the guests that come on our show because it really gives the show a nice flavor. Just for our audience, you know, who you're watching, you probably know, we're on YouTube, we're on Rumble, and we're on Facebook live right now, and this will be archived. And we're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, Twitch and Twitter, and we have account?
LG.association on Instagram.
Hit that up for us. Subscribe to us if you can. We really appreciate it. So let's talk to our guest. I don't know much about our guest because I know he worked at Lavalette many years ago, and he lives down in Florida now. And Joe Cassino is a good friend of mine. I worked at Lavalette. I worked at Seaside Heights, and so we do have that in common. So, Paul, you want to give us a fill-in? When did you work? How about we start with Lavalette, when you worked there, how old you were, and then we'll go from there.
So, again, Lifeguard Show, it's something near and dear to my heart. I think it's a passion of mine. I'm able to do this. Again, I'm able to go back. I tell people you can go back, because I did. I started in 1975, the last 2 weeks, a lifeguard by the name of Ray Rowland. That Mike, you know Ray Rowland? He was a long-time Lavalette lifeguard.
Yeah, I know him, but they don't know.
Yeah, that. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, he comes up to me on the beach, says, hey, they need guards like they do at the end of the season. I'm sitting on the beach. I'm 16, I guess, 17, whatever. So I took the test, and I became a guard for the last 2 weeks. And then I started in earnest in 1976. First person I ever sat with was Joe Cassino. And Joe, if your audience knows, is a legendary. He really is. I mean, one of the most competitive men I've ever met. A very dear friend of mine and dear friend of yours, Mike.
Yeah.
So he sat with me. They said, sit with this kid, right? You know, even though Joe was a kid, but he was very seasoned. He didn't talk to me all morning. I mean, I didn't know what the heck to do. I didn't know if I had to look at the beach, look at the water. I mean, you know.
That's that rookie treatment.
He says, go get the can. I didn't know. You know, I picked up the garbage cans. I didn't get the, you know, I didn't know what a torpedo was or anything like that. So that's my initial initiation, I should say, into guarding. So I did it all through my senior high school, through college. And then I did something pretty dumb. My last year of college, I went to the University of Florida. I fell in love with a University of Florida cheerleader by the name of Mimi Gatto. Mimi, if you're listening. And I was like,
I hope to God, man.
So she was going to summer school that year, right? I was going to my senior year. So I gave up 1 year of guarding to go to summer school. I didn't have to.
To go hang out with Mimi.
To hang out with Mimi.
Yeah.
I mean, my... The thing I love most, you know, the greatest job I ever have, and that's all I tell people, and I'll tell you the story how I got to go back. So I'm still friends with Mimi, right? And every once in a while I'll say, you know, you son of a gun, right? I gave up a whole year. She said, I was worth it. I said, yeah, I guess you were. So, good girl. This day. We're still friends.
Before we get into how you got back into lifeguarding, did you grow up in Toms River? Were you a surfer? Were you always like an ocean kid?
Okay, well, that's a good question. First of all, I was born in Jersey City. I grew up in Union, graduated Union High School in 1977. In fact, tomorrow's my 45th high school reunion.
Are you going?
Of course I'm going. You kidding me? Even got my beard trimmed this morning, so I didn't look like a real, you know. But, no, I did it through, Tyler, your question again, I was going to the, you know.
So you didn't grow up by the shore?
No. Okay,
Did you spend your summers coming down here? Were you surfing?
Every summer, I spent my summers here. My grandparents owned a house that they bought like in 1949, 1950 on President Avenue in Lavalette. And so as a kid, I grew up here. I never swam competitively. I'm not one of these, you know, the casino brothers. I never was in a pool, okay? But I grew up swimming, surfing, all the above. Love the ocean. I'm a strong swimmer. And in the old days, you know, Dick Hoffman, if you know that name, like, was the captain. And, you know, he hired, you know, for lifeguards, football players, wrestlers, softball players.
Athletes.
Yeah, the only people that swam are the casino brothers, right? Now it's the complete opposite. They're swimmers, right? Uh-huh. So yeah, that's really how I got into it. And got into it by accident, really, not really, but Ray Rowland said, hey, they're taking a test. And I said, hey, sure, it sounds like a good job, because I was washing dishes at the Cozy Nook, which anybody who's old in your audience knows, that was a luncheonette place for years, and I love it. But
that's not still there? I kind of recognize that name.
No, it's not. It hasn't been there. It's like I worked at Crohn's. Mike, you probably remember Crohn's.
Oh, yeah, Crohn's. You know? Crohn's was a big place.
So it was better than washing dishes, and you know, I fell in love with the whole process of guarding and made a lot of great friends, including Joe and Jack. So, yeah, and that's how I got into it. And I used to be part of the tournament team, too. I was a rower, and I was a line puller.
I always find it so interesting how many people, like, if you had asked them a year before they started lifeguarding, what are you doing next summer? They wouldn't have said lifeguarding. You know, so many people just fell into it. And then next thing you know, they'll be saying it's the greatest thing they've ever done.
It's going light and dark.
Pretty amazing. I never really thought about it until, you know, I'm sitting on the beach and Ray Rowland comes up. I just saw Ray first time in like over 40 years. And I thanked him profusely for, you know, giving me the opportunity. So if you want to just move forward quickly, okay, how I got back into it. So every year I go to Lavalette, right? I'm coming up from Florida. And I, you know, spend a week, whatever, 2 weeks in Lavalette. So I said to my wife, come on, let's go over to the lifeguard shack, you know, see my old buddy, see if anybody's around. And this is 10 years ago, maybe, fellas. So I go over there, and I see Bob, and I see Jack, and I say, I asked, you guys still have trouble keeping guards at the end of the summer? Because, you know, a lot of the kids go back, you know, to college, you know, go to high school, whatnot. And Bob says, yeah, why? You want to work? Yeah, you crazy? I mean, it's been like 30-something years, you know? You know, I stay in shape. I play in a men's league ice hockey. I still do all these years.
Awesome. I like to swim. That is awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, but I said, nah, what are you, crazy, right? So I'm walking back on the great non-commercial boardwalk of Lavalette, and my wife turns to me and says, you know, you always tell everybody your favorite job ever is when you guarded on the Jersey Shore. I said, you know, you're right. So I thought about it, and I called Jack Casino over the winter. I said, hey, I'm in next summer. So a really good friend of mine is a three-time Olympic gold medalist down in Florida. Her name is Brooke Bennett. She won, I think, one gold in 96, two in Sydney. And
swimming, I'm assuming.
Swimming, yeah. So I called Brooke up. I said, Brooke, I'm going to be a lifeguard again. You gotta train me, right? And so she did, you know. And every year, you know, it's like traditional now. But in the beginning, she really worked me, you know, my stroke and to get me in shape. So you know, I didn't look like some fat slob out there.
Did you guys swim in a pool or the ocean?
It's a good question. Start in the pool, and then we went not the ocean, Sean, the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
Which is like a lake or like a pool, you know, if you ever, you know, it's rare. It's
always flat,
yeah,
right?
It's always flat. So that's what we did. And we still do. And she's a great gal. And she competes in triathlons. And she works for the Clearwater Beach Patrol a couple days a week, you know.
We got to get her on the show, huh?
Yeah, she would be great to have.
That would be going from, like, bottom of the barrel guest to very top.
All right, now listen, I could say I'm bottom of the barrel. But to have you say it is, you know, come on. All right?
You know so I'm
let me,
kidding.
Let me,
you know
but, I'm but Paul, let me just go back for a second. So I want to get this right because, you know, I was there floating around. I started in Seaside Heights in 77.
Right.
Joe and I worked, you know, we went to college together and we swam at OCC.
Mm-hmm.
And my first year, Joe used to come over to Seaside and we used to ride waves right. after hours, after we were done, Joe and I. And we really didn't know what we were doing too much, you know. And we were probably 18 years old, you know, maybe 17. I don't remember now, 17, 18 years old. But so you started in 76. That was the centennial year, actually.
Right, right.
And 200 years. And then what was the last year full time that you worked on the beach in Lavalette?
1980. It should have been 81, 80. But, you know, 80. You know, Mimi Gatto, the Florida.
Okay. Mimi Gatto.
Okay. University of Florida cheerleader.
So I'm just trying to remember because at that time, I don't know if I was coming over to Lavalette and training a lot at that time. I don't remember when I started because there was a time where I started to go over and train in Lavalette, still work in Seaside Heights, but I could do tournaments. And I was just wondering if you were there at the same time. I don't remember.
Could have. You know, yeah. I don't remember, but you know, you do pass a lot of guys. So
Yeah. And that was about, I did my first stint. I was there from 77 to about 81 or 82. I had to do some schooling at that point. But then I came back too. You know, I did my residency. And I'm not, I don't want to, you know, change the show from me to you, but it's interesting that, you know, a lot, it is interesting. You know, tell you what, once you get sand in your toes, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's
vitamin really, D is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, I mean, it's something like Joe Cassino, I always talk about it. I said, we can make what we make, you know, being a doctor and you know, and a businessman and make that. We would have signed up a long time ago.
Oh, know, yeah, so. The greatest tragedy of seasonal lifeguards is that we can't make a career out of it.
Yeah.
And I knew that from day one.
They do it. Like, they do in California, though. If you guys know that story, right?
Well, yeah.
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 Wait, what do you mean that story?
Yeah.
Well, there it was kind of a big expose on these guards that are doing overtime and private lifeguarding, and they're making $300,000-$400,000.
Oh yeah.
No, you
in California,
listen.
And just like
guarding at pools and stuff, or like
no lifeguards. It's full time.
Just freelance lifeguarding.
Yeah. No.
They work for the city and whatnot, but they're getting all this overtime and.
Let me stop for a second. Why are you asking? Here's the thing. Jerry Faulkner down in this full-time job. It's just like a cop.
Yeah, but he's talking about $300,000-$400,000.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's some in a high-end. Yeah, no, that's...
that's what's interesting.
These guys were outliers, you know, in California. But, no, you know... No.
That's pretty cool, though.
That's good.
That's wild.
Good money, yeah.
You got average salaries out there who, you know, 150, you know, and they got pensions. It's just like a police officer, especially if you get a higher rank. There was some outliers. There was people in New York City and Chicago making that kind of money. But that's for another show. But getting back to you with your thing, and you say, wish we could do it all year round. So you ended around 80, and then you went down to, where'd you go after that then? So let's pick up the story. I just wanted to see how long, what was it first time that you
I was in University of Florida and then I stayed, never intending to, and still I still don't. I love Jersey. I'm a fish out of water in Florida. Florida's okay, great place to visit. Don't recommend living there for me.
But, what do you think it is that like about Jersey that always draws people from Jersey back?
There's nothing like it. I mean, you know, you first of all, it's beautiful, okay? You know, I'm here in the, you know, yeah, every area has its Pulaski Highway, okay, Skyway, you know, Newark and, you know, all that stuff, then Linden. But, you know, look at our beaches, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we have beautiful, for the most part, maybe Atlantic City, Long Branch. We have beautiful Cape Cod-style homes on the beaches with sand dunes, right? Most, you know, Florida, most of it is all, you know, high-rises, ugly hotels on the beach,
right? Up to the beach.
Yeah, you know, it's, come on. You know, we do have that season, so it makes it special. And then it goes right into beautiful fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got food.
Yeah, all these farms that make markets.
That's right. Yeah, thank
grow
you.
Food.
Yeah, you know, the Garden State. It's true. People think it's just, you know, they fly into Newark to go to New York City, and that's all they see, right? Yep. You know, the people are real here. You know, it's hard to explain. It's like you can't explain the Jersey Shore to people that don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I can't explain it in words to somebody that doesn't get it.
Yeah.
So
I like what you said about people being real, because there is like an intensity about people from Jersey. That's sure. Like that we're sandwiched between New York and Philly. Nobody gets us. You know, we're all just like
right.
You know, a little bit angry.
Yeah, we have a little chip on our shoulder. Yeah. That's fine. We have great pizza. We got pork roll or, you know, tell him, you know, whatever your choice is.
Whatever floats your boat with that.
We have a lot of culture, you know. I mean, it's a fabulous state. So, but hey, can I just throw something in here?
I'm talking
about, you know, Mimi Gatto, my old girlfriend.
Right.
I'm married to the love of my life. Okay, Beth Rollins.
Okay,
is my wife. So
shout out, Beth.
Yeah, you better show. Yeah, I was gonna say you better.
Years, so if she ever listens to this,
yeah, she's like, he's only talking about me.
Right. I can't wait to see her in a couple of days and my two dogs that I haven't seen in like 2 months. So you know, I do love my wife, but yeah, you know, Mimi was my old girlfriend from many years ago. Anyway,
so you came back. So you came back. I'm sorry, Troy, Tyler. So you came back. So you're down there. So finish it. You went down there, and then how you know what went on down there? Your career and everything.
Yeah, well, I started in radio in sales, and then I worked for Clear Channel, which is now iHeart. In fact, mm-hmm. I have a 25 year watch from them. You know, that's how long I was there for.
Now, iHeart, just so our viewers know, iHeart, is that a internet radio or is that actually stations? Broadcasting out.
It's the largest. Broadcasting radio station company in the country.
Do they have like towers or is it just internet now?
No, they have radio stations.
They own radio stations.
Clear Channel.
So. Correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't they the first, if not one of the first, doing like internet radio where you could download an app and get iHeartRadio?
They've been very, very progressive as far as that's concerned. You know, they had the wherewithal, but what happened is they were bought out by private equity, which a lot of companies are, and everything changed. But, you know, in the 90s, it was like one of the top 10 stocks on U.S. Stock Exchange. I mean, they were just, you know, acquiring critical mass. And then Bain Capital and Effley Thomas Partners, or I forget that if that's the name, came in and bought them out, you know, cut a lot of the really good radio people out because that's what they do. They come in, they slice and dice, and, you know, it's not what it was. But I had a great career there. Then, I worked for Cox, another great company also bought out by private equity, and then I finished my career in television for Hearst. You know William Randolph Hearst.
Oh yeah, Flood, yeah.
137 years or something right now. So
who's William Hearst? Wow.
William Randolph Hearst was somebody you should Google, Sean. I mean he was one of the richest men in the world, acquiring newspapers. Mm. Back in 20s, 30s, 40s. I mean, he was Hearst Castle in California. He built. So he was a media magnate in that day. But in those days, it was all newspapers. He owned like every newspaper, every major newspaper, it seemed, back in the day.
Right. And Sean, just to fill in, we talked about him before. Not only did he own all the newspapers, because he owned newspapers, he was very, very powerful. Yeah. You probably couldn't become president of the United States unless he supported you right. or a governor. Now, there's a movie. Think? What was the name of the movie? All the pres. No.
No, yeah. It was Orson Welles, right?
What was.
Yeah, that was.
yeah. Or not All the President's Men.
No, the movie on.
It's about. Put down in a movie, Alan Hearst. It'll come to me in a minute.
Citizen Hearst?
Citizen Hearst.
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane.
So it was a movie about Hearst and how powerful he is and how he decided on a lot of people's lives.
They say this is like one of the best movies ever made.
Yes.
It really Citizen is. Kane. It was.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. They did a lot of things with photography and whatnot. 1938, 39?
Oh,
41. Yeah.
Right. Great, great movie to watch. Really, you know, and that's a good thing that she brings up, because Sean, you know, not that you know, so you don't even know this guy. This was such a big influence in media, you know, like what we're doing now. I mean, but you couldn't get away. You couldn't do anything. And I think the movie demonstrates that. He was a power broker. And he could destroy you just as easy as he can make you.
He owned all these newspapers, so he could, you know, he could endorse your competitor if you didn't, you know, kowtow to him.
And of course, they never wrote anything that was untrue.
Of course not.
That's only now, right? That's new.
That's the thing. Everybody complains about the media being so, you know, political, right wing, left wing. You know, it always was.
It always was.
Yeah, I mean, Abraham Lincoln got destroyed.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know, they used to call him a baboon, a gorilla. Abraham Lincoln. I mean, the newspapers, you know, it's always been that way. It's worse now, though.
Look at this. A great movie, Sean. And I want to, you know, digress here. It's called, what's his name? Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Mm-hmm. And it's a 30s movie. Mr. Smith is a congressman. He goes to Washington. He's all idealistic. And there's another congressman who tries to, he's trying to build a dam or something. So it's basically a fraudulent deal. And he finds out about it. He was told, hey, just let it go, and he doesn't. And he does a speech where he does a filibuster. He doesn't let anybody talk. He goes for like 24 hours of just talking, and he finally passes out. But what's interesting about that, the media goes after him. And the guy who was pushing this, I can't remember the individual, but he was, again, another big media individual. They wrote all kinds of crazy stuff about him, that he was the one who was trying to perpetrate the fraud. So it's called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, another great, great movie. I think he won Academy Award, or was it nominated for it. But all these things show you how media influence politics in the world, and how, not just a little bit, big. And that's why they actually have movies about it back then. Just like I was telling these guys, I just watched a great movie called The Young Savages. It was a Charlton Heston movie back in the 60s. Great movie. And anyway, so...
But yeah, but people complain about the media now, but it's been that way for years.
Do you think, like, because, like, we just, like, Hearst, right, owned all the newspapers. So is that intentional, like, to drive sales, right?
To drive monopoly. Out his competition?
Monopoly. Yes. Monopoly. Yeah, of course monopoly, it is. Yeah.
But, like, it's just beneficial to both sides to have an opposition.
Always.
So to sell both types of newspapers.
Always. Yeah. Always. You always need two voices. I mean, two political parties. I mean, again, people complain about both parties, but, you know, you need that.
But what's not? Here's what you want to have, though. If you really want the ideal thing, say you're running the show, like Hearst, you'd like to have a controlled opposition. I don't want to get into politics, but controlled opposition.
That's like me and Sean on this show.
You control, so you have opposition, but you control it. And you titrate, you throw them a bone once in a while. And a lot of people say that's what's going on now in politics. So let's go, since these guys always want to push me into politics. Come on my other show if you want to talk
about it. You take it there, man.
Now, I got that spin. So you're in Florida now, and then you're working for this company, which is really amazing. And so one thing you did mention to me, I just want to throw out. You met a lot of... I don't want to say famous people. You don't have to use their names, but like, were you involved in you know, some of these people that were maybe famous now that were starting out and really got into radio?
Well, yeah, you did. You know, a lot of famous people came to the radio stations, and you met them, and as they were coming up, I met a host of them. One of the perks of doing what I did, I never paid for a concert ticket. I've never paid for a sporting ticket in Tampa Bay.
It's a pretty good plus.
So that was a nice part. I mean, Game 7, Stanley Cup, Lightning against Calgary, you know, 2004? Game 7, I didn't pay for it, just to give you an example. Super Bowl tickets, I mean.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a nice perk working in media in Tampa Bay.
And you were just in an executive role?
I was in management, in sales management.
Okay. Well, what did you study in college?
Political science.
Okay.
And you ask me, somebody asked me, okay, do I use my degree? I married a political consultant. That's what Beth does.
There you go. Is that where you met her, in college?
No, actually, water cooler romance, if you guys understand what that is.
Please explain.
You work together. You kind of.
These young guys,
snuggled by the water cooler, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
So she started off as your work wife, then she became your girlfriend, then you married her.
Well, yeah, we were buddies first, you know, we came about very organically, you know, we were friends, and then, you know, one thing led to another, and 33 years later, September 30th, We're still together, a couple of kids, yeah, and yeah.
You know, I tell these guys here. You know, I tell these guys. Somebody was asking me the other day, like, you know, why are you getting married this, you know, this age? Well, Ron Whitman's been for eight, nine years.
Cashmore's having a wedding soon.
Yeah, he knows. But I'm saying, if you guys are lucky enough to meet somebody who is just, you know, ticks all the boxes, and you know, that's you're very lucky. You know, it doesn't happen all to everybody, it doesn't happen all the time. And
it's not always easy, you know. You got to work through it. That's the beauty of it, working through it. Yeah.
So you're down there, and then so you obviously weren't working in Lavalette, and you weren't working as lifeguard down there these years, right?
So I had a real job, you know, as a real job. Lifeguarding is more important than 99% of jobs out there, right?
But
I was working on my career, and we had a couple of kids, and I always came back to Lavalette every summer because that's, you know, everybody said my happy place, you know.
Right.
I'd rather be on the Jersey Shore than anywhere else. So I told us the story how I got back into it, okay? So now
you're coming up, and Bob approached you, and then they said,
yeah,
hey,
Bob,
help out.
Bob says, why, you want to work? And so I'm I look at him like he had three heads. What are you, crazy?
So you started doing the end of the season. That's where
right,
you felt
I would take my vacation time. Right,
like what, like the month of August?
No, not that much. I mean, you know,
couple weeks.
This is corporate America.
So you were still working.
I was still working, right?
But you were taking a couple weeks off to come up.
And I would work through Labor Day.
Then
I would fly back like that morning, Tuesday, the next day, and I'm sitting in an office staring at a computer and saying, "Are you kidding me or what?"
That's an interesting story because there's a lot of other people who do that. I know some lawyers, you know, down south, and they'll fly in. And I think in Miami Beach, I think Jerry was telling us that they've got somebody who comes in from California, whatever, I don't know where, and they lifeguard for, you know, a few weeks or month or whatever, and then they go back. I mean, they love it. So
that's how addicting it is because it's like – yeah. It's not even like it's an easy job. Like, you're so tuned in and wound up all day.
And it's very physical, too. As somebody who's 64 now, or soon to be here in a couple of weeks, you know, it takes a toll on you more than it did when I was younger. It's like, you know, I come home at night and I just decompress for an hour. Like, in the past, I just go right out. But I love it. I love the physicality of it. I love getting in the rowboats.
How is sitting the wood again? Like, just being there for...
Oh, I love it, man. Number one, I sit with young guys.
Yeah, how is that? Self. Like, what's that age the gap like?
I think it's wonderful. Number one, you know, Lavalette has a phenomenal crew. Jack Cassino has done a fabulous job just hiring and training and mentoring. And speaking of mentoring, that's what I feel like I do. I mean, because these kids ask me questions. Some more interested in not my life story, but I'm more interested in what they're doing, what they're thinking about. So I get to mentor these kids and talk to them about life, you know, because like I tell my own kids, I'm not smarter than them. You know, they're all smarter than me. But, you know, like Mike and I have the ability to look back. It's called wisdom, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we can maybe help you avoid potholes or help you, like, fall into them, because sometimes you need to do that in order to, you know, just maybe get a little smarter and figure it out yourself. So I love that part of it. You know, and the one difference is a lot of them are always looking, you know, they bring their phones up. You know, I never bring my phone up unless, you know, there's something that I really need, you know, but the phone thing is just a
culture. Here's the thing, I want to throw it out so you know.
Jack's listening. It's not that they're looking at the phone all the time.
No.
But once in a blue moon, you know, they'll look and I say, all right, I'm looking at the water. If you need to look at your phone. You know?
Just so you know, their policy and like our policy is, you know, and I told them, they let them have their phones in case it's an emergency call from home.
Right.
But they're not allowed to use it. And if they get caught using it, they get a week suspension.
Yeah.
Then the next time you're fired.
Yeah, it's the same thing with our beach,
we don't allow, just so you know, we don't allow phones on the stand. They have to leave them in the headquarters, and because we're concerned about distraction. But anyway,
it's honestly kind of nice, just like not being near your phone.
No, I think
I used
it's
to have
great.
A crank radio that I would keep
I
on.
I had a solar powered one.
Yeah. So. I knew it was exactly 52 turns of the handle to get a full charge.
Nice.
And it would last about an hour and a half, and then you're cranking again.
Our kids are great, seriously, and if they have to use it, it's very very rare. But you know, it's just generational, you know.
So. What is your role right now on the beach, and like how are you applying what you learned in all your years in like corporate America to that? And what did you apply from lifeguarding originally to what you brought into the professional world?
Well, like all your experiences and different jobs you have, you know, you become a more well-rounded person. And as far as it applies, as what I did in the corporate world to, you know, it's discipline. You know, I mean, I've been around. It's discipline. You know, I've always, you know, I was trained right. You know, I watched the water, the whole nine yards. But I don't know if there's anything that I brought from the corporate world other than just, you know, I'm older. I understand the importance of, you know, when Jack says this, you know, we do it, you know.
Not following protocols.
Just following protocols.
Hierarchy,
and,
yeah.
You know, and respecting, you know, your bosses and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
What I think is important, like our beach, what these young kids learn is how to deal with the public. And, you know, so when our kids, you know, we're in Seaside and, you know, you have every individual, every situation. People sometimes are at their best, sometimes are at their worst. And then when they leave our beach and they go into the real world, they can handle that diversity. Also, we do have, you know, we go from 0 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour sometimes. You know, 5 lost kids, broken arm, leg, somebody passed out, you know, 2 rescues going at one time, and they have to manage all that, and they're running around. So I think that is something that, you know, a lot of our kids take to the to wherever they go. I think coming back, like from us, older people, we just had my lawyer, a good friend of mine, Mike Jacobus, he's working back on the beach now. He was many years ago. Actually, he was in the 90s, and he's such an inspiration. He rides the waves. He go, you know, like for breaks, he'll go and swim in the ocean. And I'm very sure sitting with him, the lifeguards get a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he's an attorney, you know, and second of all, he has a ton of experience. And when he did work, he was a great lifeguard. So I think the kids are getting, you know, bonus with that. So,
you did remind me of something, Mike, you know, from Tyler's question. One of the things I do, one of my favorite jobs, is to get to know people on the beach. Mm-hmm. You know, I love talking, you know, I'll talk to anybody. Talk to you guys.
Yeah, right. Or anybody. Yeah. Right.
So I love talking to people, right? And, you know, sometimes you meet, like I met a woman the other day. My mom's passed away 34 years ago. She was a dear friend. I hadn't seen her since the funeral, right? I don't know if you guys ever watch Food Channel. Maybe you do, Mike. I met Amanda Freitag, who's one of the judges on
Chopped.
Chopped, excuse Ooh. Me.
Yeah, my wife watched it. Yeah.
Watch a little Food Channel.
Yeah, and she was on the beach, and now we're good buddies. I mean, you know, we've been emailing back and forth. So you never know. But I tell the kids, get out there. Talk to people. You know, somebody sitting on the stand and watching. You know, you're watching, but, you know, you can still talk to people on your left, people on your right. Mm-hmm. It's fun. You never know, right? So
that's a fun, that's a great thing.
That's a part I love, getting to know people on the beach. I'm going to my lunch break. I'm talking to people as I'm heading out, you know.
So let me ask you this. You've been coming back while you were working. Uh-huh. Now you retired. Are you spending any more time up here? Or are you still doing the same kind of thing? Like you're not expanding the time you're up here?
No, your family. I came up late July, so I couldn't have done that before.
A little bit more expanding.
Well, almost 2 months.
Now down in Florida, are you doing anything down there? Are you hooked up with any lifeguard?
Actually, I worked the pools. I worked the city pools, but not much, part-time. You know, they needed guards, so I said I would help. I don't want to work the beach there. You know, the sun and, it's 90.
Gets really hot down here.
And the water in the summertime, guys, it's 91, 90 degrees.
No.
Ugh. I mean, it's horrendous. And because you get out and it's 95 degrees. So, yeah, I just do the pools, which is fine.
And there's not really surf down there either, right?
Well, not on the Gulf. No, on the East Coast, Sebastian Inlet, you know, great surfing area. But
That's where, you know, in Cocoa Beach and all that, that's noted for the waves. Correct.
But, yeah, no, there's not. So
so you do a little pool stuff there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the summertime up here. And, you know, you always have a job with those guys, you know, Jack and Joe. And, going back to Joe Cassino, you know, and him and I, you know, work together. And that beach, at the time when I was there, it was a captain. It was Cresbar, Jim Cresbar.
Well, I worked with Jim.
Yeah, and what a professional! And that place, they had that place down to a mechanical art, especially when you did tournaments. We used to practice just spinning the boat, getting in and out of the boat. And the workouts we had were insane, especially when Bob did the workouts. You know, we just did crazy stuff. But you make a good point. They always try to get quality people. And, you know, they always wanted to have top swimmers, you know, some Division One, and but they always looking for quality character people. And I remember Krez would fire a guy. I mean, if they were off the Richter scale, they were gone, you know. And they also, you know, they hired the beach control and the beach patrol. So I've had a lot of fond memories there. And then when we all went up to State Park. I don't know if you know that. We worked there for a few years. And Joe ran one of the South Beaches. That's where Chip, I
work with Chip in Lavalette. You know.
Right. Well, Chip went up there. Now he's the captain of the State Park.
Right.
And we had Chip on the show here a few times. He's got a really good program up there. And
first time I saw him in like 40 years, I said, Chip, what happened to that beautiful black hair you used to have? First thing I said to him, but it was all good.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
He had a beautiful, gorgeous head of black hair. Now it's all gray, and it was real short. So, but no, you're right, though. The tradition holds Jack and Joe and, you know, Darbo and, you know, Lieutenant
Scott
there.
Darbo just did the boat for me. Yeah, Scott. Yeah. Scott. So.
Yeah, Matt Condit. I mean, they do a great job training. The right. kids we have are just phenomenal. Good kids. You know, it's a great beach to work. You know, Lavalette really is. It's a beautiful place. You have a lot of families. You don't have that many day people like you do in some of the other beaches, but, you know.
I love going. And you know, the funny thing, like I work out like in May, you know, we have the boat down in the bay. So all the life, you know, kids start to come. And what you know, like you make a good point. I've never felt uncomfortable or unwelcome, you know, on that beach. I mean, and especially Jack and Joe, but everybody, you know, Jack's wife. It's just one of those places. Everybody's so nice. Yeah. And, yeah, the people, too. It is a mellow beach.
It's like Cheers. Everybody knows you, you know?
That's a good show. I watched Cheers.
Yeah, sure. But years ago, it was different, though, Mike, when Dick Hoffman had it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know if you knew Dick. Dick, you know, he liked when we screwed up. You know, I mean, he had to come down, but he loved it, right? And, you know, there was a lot of characters in those days. I remember, like, the first rainy day, I sat with Charlie Polchuk, right? This guy was massive. You could have Thanksgiving dinner on his shoulders. Yeah. Football player. So he picks me up in his little MGB, right? And it's a rainy day. And in those days in Lavalette, you know, you didn't have the sand dunes. You would go up to the end of the
street,
and you could see the water, make sure nobody's in there, right? And before he does that, he picks up a case of beer, you know, the little... Nips,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh, subs. Yeah.
And we're, you know, I mean, this is going back 1976, but it's not like that today. I mean,
No.
I mean, I didn't know what to do. I said, you know. If he said, yeah, you can drink.
This doesn't seem appropriate.
No. And Dick, you know, in those days, Tali, he would keep the beaches open. I mean, you know, what we call red flag days now, right?
He'd keep them open.
You know, they wanted to keep them open. I remember Joe and I were on Beach 9, okay, at like Newark Avenue in Lavalette. One day, you know, Nor'easter's coming in. He and I were in there like 30 times. We were laughing. It was like, you know, you have to deli, right? Number 32, give me a half pound General Salama. Joe, you go. Number 33, you know, boiled ham, you go. You know, 30 times. We were exhausted, but it was a great day, too. You know what I mean?
It's interesting when you make that point is that we didn't close the beach for anything. We let people swim.
In the old days, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, like after a hurricane, you might have modified it, you know, let them out. And it was a different world back then, and I think part of it is the philosophy of the towns was, you know, their people are paying and let them go, you know, and they're down for the day, and we made the rescues. I think there's still some places. I watched that Bondi Beach. That's how they are. They let people swim, you know, and they make the rescues. But I just want to make a point about Lavalette. Did you, when you were there? I was telling these guys about the Hankins boats. Can you give us a little bit about the Hankins boats? Because you know, they don't exist anymore. I don't think anybody rows them, but I rowed those boats, and I'm sure when you were there, they were pretty neat boats.
That's what I learned on. I mean, they were big, heavy. I think they were heavier, but when I came back and started rowing the Van Dynes, I was like all over the place. You know, it's just a different feel. But I love the Hankins. I mean, I wish they were still around. But yeah, you know, I'm getting better on the Van Dynes.
Yeah. So you're still hopping in the boat?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean. No longer, you know, on the tournament team, you know, but I love rowing. I mean,
did Joe take you out and ride some waves at all? Or
yeah, no? Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, you got to ride.
I mean, you know, it's one of the things you look forward to.
Yeah. Now, were you involved in any rescues this summer that you could tell us about? Anything that you were even just, you know, supervising? Any? Because I don't know, we really didn't have that many big rescues.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet summer.
I didn't have that.
You know, I had a couple of, like, assists. You know, I had one, but nothing major. But you know, like we all know, right? The best lifeguards are dry lifeguards, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how about this then? Can you give us a? Change the names to protect the innocent, but can you tell us of a big rescue you were involved, even back in the day, like say when you first started? Can you remember anything? I know I put you on the spot, but can you remember anything, like one that, because Chip has a story about, you know, we always kid around with the kayak and a 10-foot, every time he tells a story, the waves get bigger and bigger, you know, like my stories about, you know, with Joe Gamoka, but do you have any story that you could... that you remember that was like, whoa, that was like kind of like a one in a...
Yeah,
you know.
I do, and I'm going to criticize myself while doing it.
Yeah. That's, you know.
So years ago, Dick Hoffman's son was Weasel. Did you know Weasel?
No.
Okay.
No. I didn't know much. I wasn't around Dick Hoffman years. I heard stories about him, but...
I mean, Weasel was probably the funniest guy.
Everybody called him Weasel except... I mean, Weasel's Dick, kind of a...
Everybody called him Weasel, right? He didn't belong being a lifeguard, right? But he was Dick's son, you know, the captain's son, and he made him a lifeguard. I mean, this guy was 5'5", 110 pounds, soaking wet with a concave chest, right? But Dick asked me if I would sit with him one summer, and I did. And he was funny. I mean, keeping stitches. Hysterical. But one day, right? I mean, it was a beautiful Jersey Shore day. You know, it was ripping a little bit. And for some reason, I said, listen, Weasel, I got to go do something in the boat, which is maybe 50 yards away. And I didn't bring a can.
Okay.
Like a dope. I didn't bring a can. And Weasel's up, you know, on the stand. And all of a sudden, I'm by the boat, and I hear people screaming, right? And I yell to Weasel, Weasel, go! I mean, there was like three people, you know, caught in a rip, right? And they were panicking. And he froze. I ran in. It was no time to go get the can. I ran in just to get him.
Ooh, yeah.
Weasel did call, so I had backup, but I mean, I almost drowned because they clawed me and grabbed me, you know, anything.
Wow.
And I held them up, three people, and we pulled them in. Mm-hmm. I got reprimanded, but I told Dick, I'm not sitting with him.
It's not worth the laugh.
He froze.
It's not thing.
He can't freeze. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's.
But I was wrong not having the can.
Yeah, we have a, there was a kid we used to work with who once, Sean's told this story before. It was like his first rescue, and the senior guard's like, yo, you got to go right now. And he, like, stops, and before he puts the can on, he, like, takes his watch off and sets it on the stand and then goes. And then we're like, what are you doing, bro? The watch is waterproof.
It was like a G-Shock.
And then, like, a month later, he went in the water with his wallet, and, like, a beach patron came walking up. He's like, here, you drop this.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, that's a good point you make, and it's something that – we always worry about, you know.
Your sunglasses are one thing, Jay. Right. We spend a lot of money on sunglasses, but, you know, they just go. Yeah.
We get some, over the years, I've had cases where the lifeguards, you know, you always depend on. That's the thing. You depend on your other colleagues. And if they drop the ball, that's very dangerous. And sometimes I rather, you know, we have people who are not the best swimmers, but if you could see the water and react to it, even if you're not the best swimmer, you get out there and start going. And we had one where, you know, we had a very close call. This is many, many years ago. And the guy running the cover just missed the other people drowning, and he went right to the stand. And thank God that the lifeguard who had the one person swam sideways and just happened to swim over this guy. This guy was submerged at that point, and he pulled him up. And I couldn't get to him because I started swimming, and I lost him. I couldn't see him anymore. But that was another case of where, you know, somebody just didn't do their job. And that's why we try to drill into these lifeguards. You got to do your job. And that's why it's great to have somebody like you who is on the stand, because, you know, you're mature. And you're probably not going to flip out and get all nervous. And also, you could think, and you're going to say, listen, go for that one.
Yeah, no.
And that's a very, that is an invaluable asset to these beach patrols. And I think a lot of the beach patrols are starting to learn that people like you and I, well, I've been continuous, but to bring these guys back, even though, you know, you might not be a Division I swimmer, you're going to be able to make a rescue. But what you, but the other thing, what you bring is this, this, you know, acuity, awareness of the environment. And, you know, you and I, we look five chess moves ahead. We did that in our business. I do that in, you know, surgery, and we bring that to the beach patrol. And that's important. Sometimes you guys don't have that skill. Now, you guys are good. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, it takes years to get that kind of skill where you, where you know, you can. It's, it comes like second nature. He's right. Making a face.
How long? Here. About a decade?
No, I mean.
I'm just kidding.
Listen, everybody has a different talents, but it makes a good point. You guys are very, very good. You guys have been around a long time. But, you know.
Well, it's just, it's the 10,000 hours thing, you know. Like, yeah. I don't have it mastered yet. That's what I say to every single rookie I sit with. I point at Doc, who's a guy who's been with us. This was his 57th summer. Wow. Mm. And I point at him and I say, you see that guy right there? He sees something new every single summer.
Yeah.
So don't ever sit up here and think you got
it. No, I agree. I'm 100%. You learn something, you know, and sometimes it's hard when we have thousands and thousands of people in the water to watch everything, not to miss everything. And that's why you need, you know, 15, 20 sets of eyes on the water, and you need to overlap and everything. But you're right. You always learn. But I think somebody like you is a very good asset. A lot of us lucky to have you, too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so, I love it too. It's
so that was the only story. So that one, you almost drowned. So that was a good.
Yeah. I have another one that's a real embarrassing one.
Okay? Hit us.
This is super embarrassing.
All right. Well, listen.
You
know,
listen.
You can change the names to protect the innocent.
I'm part of that. But years ago, so it's the end of the day, right? And we decide, the swells are nice and some nice waves. Right. Water was. The wind was coming out of the west, so we decided to ride some waves at the end of the day. Me and Billy Goble. Do you guys know him at all?
No.
Okay, he was a really good swimmer. I mean, he was a great swimmer. So we go out there. We're going to ride waves. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, storm kicks up.
Right? Maybe a squall came, yeah.
Big squall came, correct. Yeah. And lightning, and we broke an oar. Okay.
Oh my God!
Oh, so you were riding waves with the boat? Okay.
The boat. We broke an oar, and and we couldn't get back in.
You didn't have a spare.
No, could not get back in. We're Lavalette lifeguards.
Right.
We had to be saved. They swam the line out Ortley Beach.
Oh, that's bad.
Could you imagine that?
That's bad. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's
so. How? Like. One. Okay. So what does it look
the
like?
Ortley Beach guards swam a line out to get us.
So you. So you lost one oar? You broke one oar?
Yeah,
you had three oars in the boat.
We had three oars, but I can't remember why, you know, I think we only had two oars for some reason. I mean, don't ask why. You broke and lost one. Yeah, thank you. We lost one. I hadn't thought of that story. I was going to bring it up, but it's a good story, yeah. And it was in my youth.
Well, I'll tell you what, many, many years ago, I'll make you feel a little better. This is Seaside Park, and this is... probably, you know, 78, 79. It was a howling west wind day, howling. And they went out rowing. We were all rowing, but, you know, when you have that kind of day, you don't, first of all, you try to go two guys so you have the power, and you don't go too far out, because the further you go out, the wind gets worse and worse. Anyway, these guys went out in Seaside Park, out in the shipping lanes, and they had a call. They called the Coast Guard on them. The Coast Guard had to bring them in. And I remember what we did that night. We went and got a big, you know, we must have got a sheet or something and wrote, rowing lessons here, you know, and we put it up on their headquarters, and we all got in trouble for that, you know.
Yeah, that was a crazy day. That was it.
So, Paul, did you, Catchmore mentions that, like, funny little, did you ever get involved in any, like, beach-to-beach shenanigans, like pranks or anything like that, or rivalries?
You know, I don't remember anything specific. You know, I mean, I was a prankster, to begin with, you know, one of the guys that just liked to have a good time. You know, we used to have, at our banquet, we used to have awards, not just the, you know, the Rookie of the Year, not just the, you know, Senior Guard Award and Tournament MVP, but we used to have the Horse's Ass Award, you know, if I could say that. We used to, you know, the guy that screwed up the most, you know, there's always that guy who, like, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Cool. You know, like we had one guy this year who had his radio off the whole day. You know. Then we had the Toilet Bowl Award, the guy asked the most head breaks, you know. And my favorite was the Hero Award. And the Hero Award was voted on. First of all, we had to wear a jacket and tie in those days. We went to the Old Time Tavern. Do you remember that place?
Yeah, Old Time. Yeah,
and you had to have a date. You know, now it's, you know, the, you don't have a date, and you know everybody dresses casual, and they're great. Our lifeguard banquet's tremendous. It's they do a great job with it. But the Hero Award was the guy who was able to was voted on, I think, by all the guards. The guy who was able to get the most dates that summer. I won it twice.
Oh boy!
Like most dates to come to the banquet simultaneously.
No, just the guy who had the most dates during the course of summer. Yeah,
right. So that would be funny if you guys were all competing to see how many girls you could show up to the banquet.
Voted by the guy that was, you know, whatever.
Those days are over,
as they should be.
We had a least buoyant rookie award at our banquet this year.
Least buoyant,
yeah, we did the superlatives too this year. It was pretty funny.
The superlatives are great, and we do those as well.
But let me make one point before you continue on about other rivalries and shenanigans. I can tell you this, and to this day, and going back 30 years. When you're at a competition with other lifeguards, it could be fierce. It could be nasty. Yeah. It could be rough.
You ever see a fight break out?
Yeah. A little pushing and shoving. Yeah, but I tell you what, after it was over, you go into a bar, wherever, everybody has total respect.
It's a real fraternity.
But you know why? Because every one of us knows what you have to do every day and how serious it gets. And, you know, I don't care what beach troll. Almost everybody, if you're there long enough, you've made that big rescue. You've actually saved somebody's life, and that brings you all together. So I don't think we ever really had like say at night there'd be some lifeguards from another beach. We'd be buying each other drinks. There'd be no fight. You know, not. And Lavalette, I remember. You know, all the beach shows because in Seaside we'd have State Park guys, Seaside Park guys.
You also meet up at Bum Rogers. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
All the guards.
Still happens.
That still happens. Great. Yeah. And you know, you were friends with guards from Wortley, Island Beach State Park, Seaside. Oh. You know,
did they beat the clock back then?
I don't remember. We played. We played. Did they still have the foosball tables? I didn't go there.
I don't think they had the foosball tables anymore.
We played foosball to the wee hours, and then you know you'd get up. And you know, and you go guard, but it was just a little different back then. But you know, it's great now. I tell everybody I could sit on that stand right and look at the water, and it could be back 1977. You know, I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same beautiful view. You know, I'm just got more gray hair on my beard, and you know.
I think some of it's the vitamin D, just like being out cooking in the sun all day.
Yeah,
just
sand between your toes, right, Sean?
Yeah.
You know, it's just the physicality, the importance of the work, getting to know, your squad, getting to know the people on the beaches. I mean, what a great job. I mean, you know, everybody talks about the beach is their happy place, right? I mean, you know, we get to work there and make a difference, hopefully, you know?
You know, it's funny. You're talking about Joe Casino. So, you know, we're obviously older. And, you know, we trained so hard all these years. And like, so this winter, you know, we'll go back again and start swimming. We swim at the Y, like, you know, and we lift and, you know, we used to run. But like last year, now Joe's 65 too, 64 going on 65. And he's an unbelievable athlete. But last year, he's like, man, my times aren't as that good this today. And he goes, I don't know what the problem is. I go, the problem is you're old.
but
you're
really,
65. He's still stuck.
Oh, you're finally falling off?
Joe could be the most competitive person I've ever met, though. I mean, he's still tough as nails. He still runs the boardwalk in the morning. He'll swim from beach 9 to beach 5, like half mile. And then he'll go row. From Lavalette to the Seaside Boardwalk and back.
Yeah, Sean and I work over at the YMCA, like right over here in Tom's River. He's there every morning swimming for like an hour.
Just, you know, that's him. He tells a great story. I don't think he's ever been on, has he?
Not yet. He's promised he wants to come. He said he's going to come on when...
when we get 1,000 subscribers.
No. When who's that comes on? The former captain of Atlantic City.
Okay.
So
I thought, you know, you got to pay him to get him on. But he tells a great story.
We're not opposed to paying guests. Okay.
He tells a great story, and I'm not going to do it justice. Only Joe can. But he tells Joe was picked for the national team, the USA national team back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was guys from California and all this.
Right.
And, you know, there was teams from all over the world, right? I think even from England and and the Australians, of course. Okay, so I love this story. So again, we're talking about lifeguarding as a fraternity. You know, the first night, you know, before the event started, you know, it was a couple of days. You know, they all got together and everybody started drinking as lifeguards do, and they got drunk, right? And the next day they competed. And the Australians wiped the floor with everybody, right?
Of course they did.
Yeah. So Joe says the captain of the USA team has a meeting with the USA team and says, listen, guys, you know, we'll show them. Tonight we don't drink, okay? And tomorrow, you know, we'll kick their butts, all right? So the Australians, as they do, got stinking drunk, right? Wanting to fight everybody that night. You know, the USA team is faking it or whatever, right? Joe says, and the Australians the next day still kicked everybody's butt.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's the Australians.
That's their secret juice.
Yeah, I mean, they're amazing, right?
I'll give you one about Joe Cascino, too. This is a great story also. So Joe was, you know, like I said, he's been competing, and he won all, you know, he's just, I forget exactly, but, you know, what competition he just finished, and they were going to come down and they wanted to do take pictures of him and do an expose on him. And now at that time, Joe was like a little skinny kid. I mean, look, skinny. He, you know, he's tough as nails, but he had no muscle. He didn't look like anything. You know, you look at him, you're like, that guy's that tough. So they came down and they were looking for, like, you know, a model like
a Greek god.
You know? A Greek god, you know, muscles and everything. And they got down, you know, and Joe's not a bad looking guy, don't get me wrong, but he. And they didn't.
They were looking for like a Jesse Brown.
Even Jesse doesn't even fit the picture.
Billy Bones or something.
Yeah. And they left. They're like, nah, and they went. And then Joe says, well, okay, go get somebody else. And they got some guy who couldn't even swim and you know, a terrible lifeguard, but he looked good. And I always remember that. And actually, you know, you talk about, you know, how famous. There's one, Joe Cascino and Gary Azzolini are going over a wave, and that was in National Geographic.
Yeah, it's a great photo. Yeah.
Great photo there. And just like our former assistant captain, Junie Boyd, he's on
Surf Magazine.
Surf Magazine, riding a wave. And how he used to ride waves, Paul, is that he would get up on the stern of the boat and use his body English, and maybe put an oar out, maybe not, but stand up. And we have Mike Jacobus does the exact same thing. And I watch Mike, and you know, he likes that technique. He's a big time surfer. He surfs all winter long, and he'll get the lifeguard boat going, and he'll stand up. And he's about what, 6'2"?
He's tall.
And he just holds the oar back there like this, but he uses his body English. It's amazing. Get a picture of him. Yeah, here he is.
No sound.
Just show a picture of him here. Is this him rolling?
This is him.
Can you make it a little bit bigger?
Just bringing the boat in now.
Oh, this is Jacobus? I thought you were going to go with the...
No, I will.
Oh, watch. Look at him. Look.
But this isn't him riding the wave. This is just him bringing it in.
Oh, just getting in. He's tall and lanky. He's 55.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
That's me.
Oh, look at that.
look at that sexy man.
Oh, God. Okay. So you don't have...
I'm trying to find this picture of Junie. Or was it Junie or John?
No, it's Junie. Junie.
It's
Junie
on
boy.
Here somewhere.
And...
This is our Instagram, by the way. Follow lg.association.
Nice.
Yeah, we have a lot
good
of
plug,
stuff
right?
This is a great one. See this one. Go back here. Just go back. Go. Can you
make this
one?
Oh, who's that?
Who's this
So this
guy?
One here. Look at this. You got to check this out. Can you make this one bigger?
This is a real Sean made.
No, where's the... But we're here. See this? I wanted to show that picture. No, I don't. Can you just go back to the picture? This is great. So here, this picture was from the 40s, and we tried to reproduce it. You know, this is an old picture.
You see it down in here in the corner?
Gotcha. Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, there's Kajmar. Yeah. Look how shredded you were. Oh, here it is.
Definitely doing your sit-ups in those days.
Yeah, there it is. Look at that.
So, yeah, there's one day in 1962, John and Sam Van Dyne loaded one of their brand-new fiberglass surf boats onto a trailer and drove it to Seaside Heights. Once there, they persuaded Beach Patrol Captain John Boyd to take it for a spin. By the time he rode it up onto the beach and clambered out, he was convinced. That was the first boat the pair ever sold.
Now, I don't think this was the
picture when he did
that.
So this is from an article from New Jersey Monthly by Nick DiUlio in 2014.
I used to watch him all the time do this. It was amazing. He didn't even use an oar. He'd just go back and forth on that seat, left and right.
I've never seen anybody do that.
Because of that, your body weight, you could actually turn the boat if you work the stern seat, you could actually... turn the boat left and right.
I've got a video of Jacobus.
And Jacobus does. You want to hook it up here?
Yeah, let me pull it up first, and then
here. plug it in. Yeah. So anyway, so getting back to you though, I just want to finish this. Well, Joe Cascino, yeah, we got great stories about Joe. So you sat with him. That was the first year. Now, how old was Joe then? You were how old? You were 16.
Joe's a year older than me.
So he's 17. Yeah. So he probably had a year on the beach because I think Joe started really, really young.
Yeah, no, he had a year or two before me.
Yeah, so him and I, like I said, we met in college in Ocean County. We swam together. We became very good friends, and I think the lifeguarding really brought us together. I just don't remember if I used to go to Lavalette, but he used to come to Seaside Heights at the end of the day, and we would take the Van Dyne out because we could. And he didn't have a Van Dyne. They had Hankins, but we wanted to, for whatever reason, we thought or he thought that the Van Dyne was a better boat to row and to ride waves. That was my point.
You know, I don't think I ever rode a dory. Did you ever?
Yeah, but they don't. Yeah. Joe had a shock dory.
Did he?
Yeah. So we used to row it. It's a flat bottom boat. I don't remember really having a lot of, what's the word I want to use? Control over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I rode Hankins. I rode shock dories. There was another boat called Van Zant that we rode. And but out of all those boats, I think the Van Dyne is the nicest and easiest boat. And I have more experience. Well, the boat down here we have is a 95. That oarlock up on the top there, if you, later on when we're done with the show, you can look at it. That's from the boat that's downstairs. That's okay. The original oarlock. Wow. And you can see it's about 50% worn through the gunnel.
Like the plastic?
The metal. No, the metal. The plastic and the metal. If you look at the metal.
Oh, yeah, I see that too.
It's from...
That is the most satisfying sound in the world. That just smooth.
Yeah, especially if you have wire.
You can hear it from like 100 yards, like just that.
You got a picture. Can we watch this?
Yeah,
so this is good.
Can you see that, Paul? You can see that good?
I can, yes.
Can you make it a little bit bigger for the screen or no?
That's as big as it goes. So boom, right up into the stern.
Wow, look at that.
See how he does it?
Just like so effortless too. He's brilliant.
It makes sense though. If you have that kind of talent, you said he's a good surfer.
That's my girlfriend.
Well, now South Jersey, if you watch the South Jersey guys, they ride the boat sitting in a seat, like in a race,
right.
And they have the oars. I mean, there's a lot of technique out there, and the South Jersey guys are the best. I mean, you can't even touch them. It's amazing how they could ride the boat in different ways. And Joe and I, now again, you talk about learning. We've been doing this for over 30 years.
You talk about like the Brigantine guys.
Atlantic City, Ventnor.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are just unbelievable. We've been competing against them. I've been in the Gowdies, and you know, we've won a few times, but they're just different animals. And Joe and I were talking about how they row and how different they row. And we try to mimic their technique. And actually, Joe and I were talking about getting one of those guys to come up who is a rowing coach, and I think he works on either Ventnor or Atlantic City, and we do a video on the technique of rowing. And I don't think anybody in the world could row a Van Dyne better and have better technique than the South Jersey guys. And they perfected it over years and years to where it's a real science. And that's why they win all the races. You know, I mean, you know, you say, oh, they're just good athletes. Yeah, but they know the technique. They have it down. And I think
Jack and Joe are pretty good rowers, though.
Oh, yeah. But you asked Joe. We were just talking about it the other night. They don't still think that they are as good as those guys down there, and because they compete against them. And you know, Joe and Jack and Darbo and whoever else, they're powerful individuals. I mean, they could lift the same kind of weights and they could run. They got cardiovascular. Joe could probably, you know, swim better than half those guys. But when you get down to it, it's a technique. And they make rescues with boat. I'm just telling you, they are unbelievable. But you always learn, you know, about the boat. So, but Jacobus is a natural waterman, and we're glad to have him back. You know, it's just amazing. Like his on breaks, we have a 3 o'clock break. He'll run out. He'll swim out to the buoy and back. You know. Like nothing.
Yeah, he's always on the board or something.
Yeah. So let me get back to you, Paul, because there's one other thing I wanted to ask you. So now you're down there, but you come back here, and you know, you had unbelievable rescues, and you've been working, you know, with all the people, and you talk about, you know, mentor these kids. Have you had any of the lifeguards? How long have you been doing this now? You've been coming to Lavalette for how many years now?
Well, I've been coming to Lavalette my whole life.
No, but how many? But lifeguarding.
Lifeguarding. First year, if you want to count, the last 2 weeks of 75, but started in earnest in 1976.
No, but coming here on like week.
How long have you been coming back?
Coming back. Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
What would be the?
I think it was 2015 or 2016.
Okay. Yeah. So 5-6 years. You know, 7 years.
7 years. Yeah.
So from my perspective, you know, one of the things that I look at is did I influence anybody? And you know, did you take anybody like you saw, you know, came back a few years under your wing and they really developed? Is there anybody that you can, you know, you don't have to use their name or anything, but did you have anybody you really think your influence really made a difference with them?
I do, yeah. Even so much in lifeguarding, just in general. I mean, we've had some amazing kids. We've had...
they ask you for advice and stuff like that. Like life advice.
A girl who went to West Point, I talked to her a lot. And another girl who went to the Naval Academy.
Yeah.
You know, we have a bunch of Monmouth University swimmers. And yeah, I hope they've taken a piece of what I had to say.
Yeah.
And I think they have. I think they appreciate and they enjoy me when I come back. And, you know, I enjoy them. I get as much out of them as they do me. You know, I mean, these kids are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I think we had a girl. Did she go to West Point? I forget who it was. She was a little short. Well,
Mackenzie Burns.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I used to sit with her, and she'd ask, like, you know, about training questions and everything. Yeah. And
she's a badass.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We had one 6'2".
This girl was like five foot flat.
But she was tough as nails.
She's going to be a doctor, and I guarantee you she will. She's probably going into her junior year at West Point right now.
Yeah, I swear, they come down in May, we go down to the bay, and, you know, these girls will come down, and they're not fat, they're big, though. They're, like, you know, tall, and you swim, and they,
I remember the one day, 2 years ago, me and Catch went down, we rode the boat, and then we were swimming, what was that loop we swam? We swam out to a buoy, then over to the pier.
We go down to the pier. Yeah, it's about 1,000 yards.
Like the bridge for West Point. We actually ran around West Point Island.
Yeah.
But we're swimming in the water, then all like the Lavalette girls show up, and they're all like legit college swimmers.
And
I'm just like,
these girls are phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm like, get me out of the water as fast as I'm not embarrassing myself in front of these girls.
I can't stress enough what a great crew we have, and we train them, and you know, Jack does a fantastic job with them, and you know, and they keep coming back, you know. So
some
of them have gone on to be very successful, and their endeavors, and you know, I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. It's wonderful to be able to go back and do this again, and I think I even love it more. I mean, I loved it when I was younger, but I think I love it more now. And thank you, Beth, for letting me do this.
Yeah. So
shout out to Beth.
So listen,
she's the real star of this episode.
Yeah, because we have two, you know, beautiful dogs, but you know, she's in the house alone, taking care of. You know, she's still working.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I have a pit bull boxer, Apollo. Okay, great dog.
Boxers are awesome.
Yeah.
I have a boxer named Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson, all right. To all the girls he loved before. And then I also have a retired Singeye dog, Black Lab.
Yeah. Wow. Well, first of all, that's, you know, I want to, because we got to get going now soon, so we got to shut this down, right? You want to be, but I want to, that's a great thing that, you know, your wife, that just shows you how great she is, that she is you know, allows you and accommodates you to come here and have your dream. That's the essence of unconditional love. Yes. No, really, it is. Yeah. And that's a, you know, what's that? What are you gonna say?
What's the thing that the Amish people do? Yom Kippur? It's like your version of that. Like when they get to leave and go their thing. What is that called?
No.
Is that the Amish
Yom Kippur is Jewish. No, you're thinking about a holiday.
No, what do you know what I'm talking about though?
Yeah, but that's for like young kids to
like when the young kid like they turn like 17 and they go like get like 2 months to just go like be crazy and do all the things you go back
then
to
you
your
have
regular
to go
life.
Back to yeah. Right, right. No, but you know, but that's
that. Yeah, no, I couldn't do it without her. She takes care of everything.
Oh,
you know,
and that's where you're lucky, yeah.
Doing my thing that I love, and she knows I love it, and you know,
my better half. I mean, she's a lifeguard widow during the summer. I mean, and I got to give her a lot of credit that she does that, and that's one of the reasons why I'm with her, you know, and she appreciates my dream, and also, you know, she's secure enough to, you know, I mean, not that we're going to, you know, pick up girls or anything, Christ, nobody even looks at us anymore.
Yeah, they look right through us, right? I mean, you know.
but anyway, listen.
You go up to ask them to, like, move their towel, and they're like, get away, creepy old man.
Yeah. But listen, we have to, I think it's, you want to get back, at 3, right? So it's 2:17. So let's put an end to this. There was a great, you know, it's an hour and 10 minutes. It went back. You didn't think, goes like that, right?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it was great talking to you guys. I was hoping I had something to offer, but
I just wanted
to say the Lavalette Beach Patrol is just a it's a fantastic place to work as a lifeguard. You know, they do a great job training, and, you know, I'm just thrilled to be part of it. So I feel very, very fortunate. So
every beach, I always tell people, they ask me, you know, where do I want to work and where do they want to work? And I say, you know, every beach patrol is unique.
Yeah.
And has its good and bad points. And Lavalette is just a fantastic place. You're absolutely right. It's a beautiful beach. It's a beautiful town. You got great athletes there. It's the supervisors and captain are great. I know Jack and Joe. Joe personally, obviously. But I tell you, that's a great place to work, and you are very lucky to be there. And I feel
that way. So
yeah, just like us, you know, we're Seaside Heights. Not that we're gonna, you know, we love, even though it's crazy,
yeah,
you know, but we've been there for such a long time, you know, we just don't know nothing else.
Right,
we do, but my point is that there's a lot of action, you know, if you want action.
Yeah, sure.
So everything is that. So anyway, let's we have a tradition here. I just want to throw it at you, and I don't know if they tell you, but so. We in Seaside Heights, we have a speaker system, and every day we clear the beaches, and we have a speech that we give. You know, these beaches are officially closing for today. There's no more swimming. If you insist on swimming, there'll be nobody to save you. Anyway, at the end, we have a saying, and we say, "Stay out and stay alive. Stay out and stay alive." Okay. So at the end here, we're going to put a little music on. If you could say that at the end, and that's our kind of our thing that we say it. You know, and we say that in our life speech. And we also say, you know, "God bless America." You don't have to say that, but we. We do that. So anything?
Yeah, we don't talk about religion on this show.
No, I do. Well, anything?
I noticed politics and religion are kind of taboo on this show.
We
talked about politics and religion for like a half hour.
Yeah,
on
yesterday,
Tuesday.
But we try to keep that for the other show because some people don't want to hear that. You know,
I do enough of that in Florida. When I'm up here, I want to get away from all that. Right.
But you know, why isn't our music? Scrubbing up with Dr. Cashmore. That's very political. Sean, you want to say anything? How about the Instagram?
LG.association. Like and subscribe. Put on notifications.
All right. And I want to just say, you know, if you guys want to send us an email, it's drcatchmar@icloud.com, right? icloud.com. drcatchmar@icloud.com. Sean, you want to, Tyler, anything to add to this?
No, Paul, thank you for coming, man. You're awesome.
Thank you for coming on. Paul,
thanks. I appreciate it. It was my pleasure. I mean,
We loved having you.
When they asked me, I said, you know, I kind of looked around. Me?
No, it's great.
We expect you back in studio the second you get back to Jersey next summer.
You got it.
So, all right. So anyway, everyone, Paul, you want to sign out and give us our speech? Now,
Mike, am I going to get paid for that? Because I have to get paid if I'm going to do any kind of
cameo.
We'll have to buy you a cup of coffee. So just stay out and stay alive.
All right.
Go for it.